Welcome to 167 Hours Beyond Sunday, a podcast hosted by Crossroads Christian Church in Gray, Tennessee, where we try to go beyond the 1 hour we're in church a week and talk about what life looks like in the rest of the 167 hours. I'm your host, my name's Ryan Evans, and today I'm joined by our women's and music minister, Tempa Bader. How are you?
I am fine. A little tired, but I'm fine.
I mean, you should be a little bit tired. For those who might not know, something a little special happened yesterday. You want to share with some of our folks?
Well, we had our first musical program in a year and a half, and the King's Kids had a little program called The Greatest Story, and It went really well. I thought I was very proud of them and just basically delighted that we were able to do it.
Yeah, I was pleasantly, you know, anytime you do something outside like that, I was worried from a sound perspective, yeah. But it actually wound up being pretty good.
It wasn't perfect, but as far as sound goes, but we did our best and it turned out fine.
Yeah, so. Great turnout, great energy. I think the only malfunction I saw was the poppers nuts.
Yes. We were supposed to have confetti go off at the end, and of course we couldn't practice it because we didn't have enough canisters.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize how hard it was to turn that big canister.
The best part of that, though, is this tiny girl up there is the one who got it off, and all the boys are just cranking on those things and just couldn't get it.
So, yeah, that was a little malfunctional, if that's a word, but it was funny.
It worked. You know, that's the great thing about, like, always, you know, the younger the kids, like, the more room you have when it comes to...
Right, exactly.
Because they're cute, you know? They can't get the poppers off.
I guess it wouldn't be a kids program if you didn't have some kind of incident, so...
I bet, yeah, better than probably some other years you've had a different experience.
We've had vomiting on the you know, so... So, missed confetti canisters, no big deal.
Not the worst explosion you've seen on...
Yes.
So today we're going to talk about probably one of the strongest tensions that exist in the church today. We're going to try to carefully approach the concept of tradition versus change in the church. And this series has been all about balance because my perspective at the end of the day is that it's when you balance the tensions that the church is at its healthiest. And I'm super excited that you're my guest on this topic because unlike some, I really do believe that you can represent both sides of this tension. Because you were a big part of the beginning of Crossroads, becoming a church and figuring out who it was, and implementing some big changes at the time, and now you're on our staff and you're one of like the rocks. You know, you've been here. You're our foundation. You can remind us of our history and kind of, you know, the why behind things, why we've done things the way we do them. So I'm just curious, like to start things off, can you reminisce a little bit and talk maybe about some of the changes and tensions that you remember from back when Crossroads began?
Yeah, I thought a lot about this. Actually, the tension didn't happen at Crossroads, so we got to go back to Hale's Chapel and realize that starting in the... even in the 80s, there were a lot of changes that began to take place. One of the changes was the growth in the youth group. And you wouldn't think that that should cause tension, but it was actually very, lots of energy, lots of new kids. So kids came with their friends, not with their families. So there were kids attending that didn't have families. But what the tension part was I think there was a group in the church that just looked at them as like, okay, these kids are noisy and
disruptive,
and they're not part of their family. Doesn't date back to 1860, whatever, when the church started.
Oh, so interesting.
And I may be adding my own thoughts into that. That may not exactly been what they were thinking, but there was some tension in the youth group growing, and it did grow during the 80s, and then in the 90s, we started incorporating not just the hymn book. We in the course of the 90s, we did what Curtis called yesterday more camp songs or
very like choruses, Rich Mullins
all that kind of stuff, and had a screen and slides, and they were literal slides because they were in a carousel projector.
Transparency,
right? No, carousel projector. Do you not know what that is?
I don't.
Already.
Oh, so like the... Go to the end. Okay, I'm with you. That was not good like for people that are just listening to us. I just like basically did charades. I'm sorry.
But Curtis mentioned the Rich Mullins song at camp and all that. But we actually had a song that was first introduced to our youth group by Mark M. Bowden, mm-hmm. which was, what was it called?
Everywhere I Go, I See You. That's Mark M. Bowden thing, I think.
I don't know. It was the one where you sang two parts. You are Lord of Lords.
Yeah.
What is that one called?
I don't remember.
Isn't that terrible? Well, he had written it with another girl from Elizabethton. And at that time, he was leading worship on our Wednesday night services. You're thinking of that song.
I'm still singing it in my head.
Sing it in adult worship as well.
You are Lord.
Okay, whatever. And but anyway, he came in one Wednesday night, and this was the generation when my kids were in youth group. Mm-hmm. And so it was in the 90s. And he said, written this song. Let me teach it to you. Why don't you all help, sing it with me, whatever. And so, in a lot of ways, that youth group felt like that was their song, And if they heard it at a convention somewhere else where they had changed the tune a little bit, it's like, that's not the way it goes. We heard it at the beginning. In fact, it came out in a teen choir book one time, and the written down melody was a little different than what we had learned from Mark directly. And it was like, we're not going to sing it that way. We're going to sing it the way we know it. Sure, that's fine. So yeah, music was changing. And that was causing tension at Hell's Chapel.
Yeah.
And that was, originally the intent was for us to all come over here together because we had outgrown our space. That was a source of tension too. Like, how come we can't build on this spot? And that's a whole other story. But, we couldn't. And so we had to move. And, the rest is history, as they say. But when we came over here for a little while, we were 100% together on board. Mm-hmm. There was no tension. There was only energy. There was only excitement. But I don't know if you know who Gene Wigginton is. That was vice president of Milligan.
I do not know.
He was vice president of Milligan, then he became president of Standard Publishing at some point. And I remember him famously saying that you could get rid of everybody in your church that's negative, and then somebody else from that positive group will become negative.
Yeah.
That you're just never going to ever be rid of some negative aspect. Yeah. So there's always going to be tension.
Yeah. And to a certain degree, I would suggest the idea that if there's no tension, you're probably not a church. Like, you're probably a country club. if everyone's just content and comfy and has their safe spot.
I would contend that any group, even country clubs probably have contention. You think of singing groups, bands, rock bands, whatever. How many of them split up because they're all on board at the beginning and then somebody goes off a different tangent?
This isn't one of the questions that we're talking about, but now that you're saying this, I'm like, so maybe one of the most helpful things a church can have is a unifying purpose. So, because like you're saying, 100% on board when y'all first launched Crossroads, I'm sure that was an exciting experience. We're starting a brand new church. You were moving. I have to imagine that was unifying.
Yeah, it was new, but not new. That's why, you've probably been in staff meeting with me when I've said, we did this or something. Well, we didn't do that at Crossroads. But in my mind, that group of people is one long thread. It's not two different groups. It's, a lot of those people, though, are not here for one reason or another. They're either dead or they've moved on to someplace else or graduated from high school and gone, moved. There's just a lot of reasons. We're not the same exact, obviously, group that we were back then. But in my mind, that's just a long thread.
Yeah, you get where you are because you got there, and I think it's worth remembering all of those things and remembering, thinking of any church in like the Stone Campbell movement or any movement as its own thing, I think a long history is always a helpful perspective because often a lot of the tensions aren't new, right? Like you're talking about like worship tension in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. Well, that is an tension that has existed since music was incorporated in the church.
Well, in the 1800s when they were writing, when Fanny Crosby and some of those people were writing hymns, that was scandalous because a lot of churches were used to only singing psalms.
Yeah.
And that's it.
How dare you? Yeah. So and, it's, and It's always worth thinking about. Well, hey, so let's turn the page a little bit. So now when you kind of look at the landscape of the church today, are there any kind of changes that are happening that, you know, like, if you're honest, scare you or maybe you're uncomfortable with?
Well, I guess the worst thing that some of the things that scare me are things that we're not going to talk about today. But I do recognize that there are things in Scripture that are kind of being turned upside down, things that Scripture says wrong. A lot of people are trying to say is right and it's okay.
Yeah, interpretation battles. Also not new in the history of the church, true. Right?
But, you know, I think I'm not talking to just about, well, maybe I am. I don't know. I'm thinking in some cases, pretty hard and fast things that people are okay with nowadays. But I actually, I will have to confess that I was on a weekend with some girlfriends a couple weekends ago, and I had these questions with me. And so I posed this one question to them, and yeah. I guess I wasn't surprised, but I guess in some ways I expected them to say one of these maybe hot topic things, but they didn't say that. One of the main thing the first thing that was brought up was that at one time when they were raising their children, the church was the center of their lives.
Yeah.
That other things took second place. School took second place. Sports took second place. Whatever else was in their lives, the church was the main thing. It's not that they didn't do. And then this one lady, her daughters were way into sports, you know, big time sports and all that. So it's not that nobody did anything but go to church. Like that might have been the case 200 years ago or something, but it was just that the church was the center and that there was a lot of intimacy in between families. And she felt the loss of that there's not that same
kind of loyalty almost, or
well, community. I know we talk about community a lot, but maybe just that's your core of your friends. That's where you, that's the people you spend time with in and out of church.
Yeah.
I think I'm not misinteresting.
That's so interesting thing. And like, I'm sure culturally for a while, like church was probably one of the largest social outlets people had.
Yeah. And I know that we think of the pioneer days, that was probably the case. And I'm not saying that this was people's only social outlet at that time.
Well, I'm just thinking about it, you know.
Right, yeah. And I'm thinking, again, this was probably the 80s and 90s when people hung out after church and watched their kids play and while they talked, and they felt a real connection with the other people around them.
Spoiler alert, I think I'm going to get to preach a sermon this summer, and it's going to be about the loneliness epidemic, because we are more connected than we've ever been as a people. But we are lonelier and less, there's less intimate relationships than there's ever been. I agree with this change in fear.
Well, and kind of going along with that is the lack of investing in the church. I'm not talking about money. I'm just talking about people really investing their lives. You rarely hear of people that have taught Sunday school for 5 years, much less 25 years. My mom taught Sunday school for 25 years, four and five year olds for 25, maybe longer years. And she could have written a book, of course, about all the things that were said and done in that Sunday school class. But people don't invest, I think, in the work of the church like they used to. It's okay, I'll do this big project and yay, I did this. But that long-term investment in the kingdom work is not as prevalent as it used to be. Maybe
it's way more about consuming than it is about giving back. I continue to agree with that. These are some wise women.
that was the biggest thing they had to say about that. And I was glad they brought that up, because I was thinking, how can I talk about, I don't want to talk about some of these hot topics. I don't want to get involved in that. That would be like a Facebook conversation. I don't want to go there.
Well, and there's always, like, you know, every generation has its broader topics of, you know, moral issues, ethical issues that, like, as culture changes, you know, it's difficult to wrestle with. And yeah, I'm also scared to go to some of those places, but I think some of those were really valuable perspectives and worth talking about. So what I love about your perspective is that it shows that the tension, and I kind of said this earlier, the tension of the past and the future of the church isn't a new conversation. Like, these things have always happened, right? There's always the generation above is always going to look at the generation below and think, what the heck is wrong with you? I can't believe mm-hmm. you're going, like, that's not a new conversation. That's historical. And you know, oh, I can't believe you're playing music this way. We played music this way. What's wrong? I can't, you know? So my question is, how do we exist in that tension, in a healthy way? Do you have any like perspective on that?
How do we exist? Well, we give and take.
Mm-hmm.
I think we learn to know each other. That doesn't make sense. We
get understand to each other.
Yeah, we become. I mean, everybody in the church is not going to be a deep friend with everybody else. It's not. Yeah. I'm not talking about that, but I'm saying if you know a little bit about somebody's background, or you know about what they're going through now, or you just know them. You know, I just one of the things, actually, even last night, I sat around a table with some people I didn't know so well. It mm-hmm. was just so cool to say, oh, you're her grandmother, and you're, you know, tell me how you came to Crossroads. Just knowing all those kind of things helps you to understand people better and help you. I think if you know somebody, you can bear with somebody better.
Yeah. Do you think, okay, so this is interesting. I want to combine a couple of things that have been said in this conversation. Do you think that, because I really do believe that as a people, like culturally, we're getting worse at like authentic relationships. Do you think as that has kind of degraded, that maybe it's making some of the tension worse because they're like, the relationships aren't there? The understanding isn't there?
Probably. I mean, it has surprised me that pre-COVID, even in choir, somebody would say, I might mention a name of a person in choir to another person in choir. They didn't even know who that person was. And that's, I take that blame because I think, okay, we don't just come together to rehearse. We should socialize a little more. But I think that also happened. I brought up.
That's the minister fault. We all live and die by the programs. We all get sucked into that sometimes.
But I've heard that. Do you know so-and-so? They come to second service or what? And no, you know, and I know some of that's going to happen because we are in two services and everybody can't be in the same small group or the same Sunday school class. And I know that you're not going to be able to know everybody in the church, but I think maybe there's more resistance or less time, or I don't know what it is, that we don't even take to greet people around us.
Mm.
In a service. I don't know. I think I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like people don't know who each other are in churches. And
it's, let me, statistically, it is a fact that people feel lonelier than they have ever felt. So you're right. I mean, that's what's so interesting is when I was planning to have this conversation with you, this isn't the issue that I like really thought we'd hone in on, but I think it's worth recognizing that maybe that it is because there's this lack of a relationship or a lack of a bridge, which I don't know if it like we can pinpoint anyone to blame on this specifically. Right. Like, but man, it is something maybe we should work on as a church to fight back against. To start kind of repairing some of the bridges between different groups and different generations and different people.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have an answer either. I don't know that it's any different than it ever has been, whether it has to do with size or, you know, a smaller congregation versus a larger congregation. Mm-hmm. I'm not an expert. I don't know for sure. But you're right. People want to have relationships. But then there, on the other hand, there are people who come in, sit toward the back, and leave as quick as they can. They feel the need to go to church, but they don't want to be
too late to Cracker Barrel before the line gets long.
No, I was going to say, that's not what I was going to say, but they don't want to be accountable to serve or be involved in any deeper way than just to be there. And the deeper way is where we get our relationships and serving together, studying together, things like that.
Those things do make a huge difference. I mean, I think back when we did serve the date and we were just sitting around tables talking, and it's like, I got to know people that day that are in our church that I didn't know.
Right.
And that's, like, which was fantastic.
And all that to say, is that when you know and understand people better, you can navigate the tensions better. I don't think that everybody's going to ever be the same. I'm not saying if we get to know each other, we'll all agree on everything. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm saying that we may be more patient with each other. And
yes,
the music disagreements won't become music wars like were spoken of in the 90s.
But that, I think that's like the difference of understanding and caring about people rather than trying to win a battle. It's like when we view it as a battle, everyone loses. And I think maybe that's why we need to get on the same team. And speaking of that conceptually, that kind of leads to my next question.
Team Jesus.
Yeah. You know, because whenever we talk about being unified in the church, we always mention big rocks or big ideas. Like, we don't all have to have the exact same theology. We don't all have to have the same idea of how to interpret Revelation. We don't all have to, you know, like... But like, there are certain things that we should be able to agree on, like Jesus being the Son of God. So with that in mind, like, I you know, when you think about kind of a lot of the tensions or the conversations or kind of some of the arguments, would you say that a lot of those are about the big rock conversations, or are more of them about stuff that maybe we'd consider more subjective or based on someone's preference?
Well, yeah, I definitely believe it's that we get in the most contentious arguments over things that don't really matter. Like, we laughed kind of over people that split over the color of the padding of the pews or the carpet, you know, things like that.
It's happened.
But it has happened. And so that could be carried over to painting. You know, we've always had tan. Well, we went to gray, which I think is prettier, by the way. But... Anyway, but somebody else might like the tan better.
I had to ask other people's ideas for the colors of the youth room. Yeah. I'm so not wired that way.
Yeah, but it's sad to think that that's the things that people get really contentious about, basically, is what I'm trying to say, rather than the things that matter.
I think sometimes that happens, though, because people don't understand why. Like, I think sometimes changes happen and people don't take the time to say, hey, here is why we are doing this. And maybe that's me just trying to be too kind. I mean, obviously, there are people who just are stinkers.
Can be just as simple as our walls are scratched up. We need to paint them. And it's a little bit more, this color's a little bit more up to date. It's good. It could be something.
But
really
I tell
simple,
you, something that I've been guilty of in the past, and I feel like this has happened here before, where it's like, it's so easy for me to see a scratched up wall and think, well, this is hideous. Why, you know, and say that, oh, this is so ugly. Why did y'all do this? And it's like, we didn't make a hideous scratched up. We made a really intentional choice that was a stylish preference at the time, and it's just been that way for a while, and it's great, you know? So it's like, I think that's where maybe some younger people or people my age need to be more respectful about the way we talk about things and the way we commentate on things. You know, like, things like color, you can mock all day long, but at one point, it was probably really cool.
Yeah, well, you brought up something which you said to me, because we were walking around campus talking about what needed to be cleaned up. This was, what, 4 or 5 years ago? I don't even remember exactly. Do you remember that?
Just crossing the four-year threshold. So I actually do think yes.
And everything, some of you guys that were fairly new were kind of making fun of some of the color choices and this and that. Mm-hmm. And I told you later, I said, you know, this is what we chose 20 years. Well, it wasn't 20 years ago at that point. And, you know, this was lovingly and very specifically.
It was intentional.
Intentional. And we were really proud of it, you know, so don't make fun of it.
Yeah, and then I have to put my tail between my legs and go, dang it, I'm sorry.
And that you was... did. And I didn't ask you to apologize. And you did, but you did. And that, you know, I realize.
I think that's the healthy tension where it needs to exist, right? Where it's like, hey, don't poo-poo on things because you don't understand them.
Yeah.
Like, and honestly, you know, and hey, I totally realize that in 30 years, 20 years, I don't know, things change faster. Eventually, I'm going to be the one that's like, what do you mean? We thought this was the best choice ever. But yeah, and you know, But it is probably worth realizing that a lot of the issues are subjective. And you know, Curtis did a good job yesterday of trying to reorient us as a church to say, hey, like, whenever we choose something, we should probably choose it with the people that are not saved or who aren't churched as the priority, which I thought was a really interesting way to look at it when it comes to worship or when it comes to anything, choice-wise, style-wise, all of the preferential stuff.
Well, in a way, it is the way we have lived here at Crossroads. We chose to build a gym first, as opposed to a worship center. We chose to build a children's and youth center second instead of a worship center. Whereas the most logical, as far as our own comfort, our own, I don't know, comfort would have been the worship center.
The more, you know, for lack of a term, selfish choice. Yeah, right. You know, this is for us.
But our idea was always we want to reach out the community in whatever way we can and draw people in, not just on Sunday morning, but other times of the week as well. And so,
which is beautiful. Like that is the right spirit. And I think that's something Jesus would be proud of, which is a unifier, you know, like, and I think whenever we can reorient ourselves in that way, that's the right way to do it. Which maybe helps us see past some of the preferences and all of those things. The next question here is how do we balance being a church that is more focused on the lost while also caring about the foundational members of our church? Because, you know, we talk about that. You know, we talk about being a church that's focused on people who maybe aren't churched. But I do think we still need to care about, you know, people who've been here, who paid for the building, you know, and all that. Like, what are some ways, in your opinion, that we could do that?
Well, okay, I didn't really read it that way. I'm sorry, I didn't really.
I was thinking
you were asking more about evangelism versus discipleship is what I thought you were asking.
Well, let's
about.
Go down that route.
Okay.
Because we've kind of hit that question a little bit already anyway.
My thought, that is another age-old question that people have argued about, you know, what's more important, going out into all the world and making
disciples?
Well, I was going to say saving people. But Jesus did say make disciples. So
yeah.
Sometimes I think people can get overly concerned about getting people saved, and they forget it's just like I've got a brand new baby robins in my porch, in a nest in my porch. Well, those baby robins would die if it wasn't for the mama robin coming and feeding them. And so it's the same thing. It's like, okay, we obviously want to bring unsaved people into Jesus's fold, so to speak, but you don't just leave him there. So discipleship is equally important, and you disciple those people into being evangelists. It's just a continuing cycle. A disciple must become at some point an evangelist, him or herself. And
and you know, so this is interesting because I think this goes back to that relationship thing that we were talking about earlier. This is just my perspective. It feels like the church is getting less and less good at discipleship, especially when it comes to like leadership and things like, and I'm not just talking about Crossroads here, I'm just talking about the church in general. It seems like this idea of really taking people under your wing and leading them and transitioning them, I do feel like maybe that is probably the healthiest version of generations interacting with each other, but it seems to almost not happen very much anymore. I'm not sure where that kind of bridge was lost. I don't know if that's when we started sending kids to school instead of them working with the parents in the household. Yeah. Like, I don't know where that kind of breakdown happened. That's not even a good question. I'm just asking a problem out loud that you probably can't solve.
You talked about intergenerational, whatever you want to call it. I had my son and daughter-in-law before she was my daughter-in-law. They were not married yet. And there was a group that was going to meet to study Song of Solomon. There's a Bible study.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one to choose.
In the 90s. They got married in 1999, and this was before they were engaged. And she, every once in a while, still refers to that group. It had people that were already retired in it, couples that were already retired, all the way down to them who were, they were 19 at the time. And she still talks about how valuable that was and how precious that was to get perspective of, and there was everything in between too, apparently, couples that were, you know, 10 years married or whatever, but just how precious that was to get to know those people, to get to hear their perspectives. And so back to the, what you actually intended, I think, about the foundational members. I think foundational members, if you're talking about as old fogies, whatever, people have been around a long time.
That's a negative connotation. No,
I'm just teasing you, but I'm saying that people my age need to never feel like they are through. That there's
retirement doesn't exist in the church. That's what you're saying.
I don't think so. I think you may move from being able to haul mulch around doing that kind of work to you can write notes or you can pray or you can
work with teenagers. Like, seriously, it's like, I've had people say I've aged out of that. And I'm like, well, you're telling me that you've got all the experience we need, but you're not, done.
I think one of the most fun things I ever did as a, well, I was combination children's minister and King's Kids leader at the time. We had multiple years, what we called star polishers. And those were older people who adopted, I'm doing air quotes, a kid. And it was a King's Kids thing at the time. So one of the King's Kids. And there are young adults at this time that still remember their star polisher. And some of them, if they haven't passed on, are still have a relationship with their star polisher. Hmm. They still keep in contact. And I think that's the value of, and that's more on the older folks, I think, more on them to step up and say, I want to be important in the life of a young person, whether it's a child or a teenager. I think that breaks down tensions. And
yeah, and you know what, I think the success of that too probably comes from the caring side, like, because I was trying to think about this, you know, why the kind of breakdown happens and why there seems to be this kind of tension. And I totally understand the perspective of, like, you young people won't listen, you won't hear, you won't but I think some of the criticism back is like, well, you don't actually care. You're just trying to tell me how to do things.
Right.
And so, like, something like the star polisher concept is beautiful because it establishes a caring relationship that leads into it.
Yeah. We also did a secret grandparent thing one year and led up to Grandparents' Day. They didn't know exactly who they were corresponding with. And then we had a reveal. And the older, and these were senior adults at the time. I think probably every single one of them has passed on to glory by this time. But they made a little poster of themselves when they were young, and they told stories. One of them told a story about walking. They met their wife at a revival, you know.
Yeah.
But I think the kids were intrigued by that. They, you know, to hear these people's stories, and then for the older person to be involved with the kids on that level, playing game. We played games at night and stuff. You know, that was, but they have remembered each other. They did for a while. I mean, like I said, I think every single one of those grandparents are now, have passed on, but, anything that breaks down a wall, so to speak, whether it's an unintentional wall or whatever, is a way that you can understand each other's preferences even, or
and you know, I've said this on stage before and I'll say it again here, if you're not in a discipleship relationship then you are not really making following Jesus' way of life. That sounds really harsh, but it is a fact. and I think that goes for every, you know, if you feel like you're a younger Christian or you don't feel as equipped, then find someone who's got a mature faith and talk with them and latch onto them. One of the most valuable things that's happened in my life recently is I just schedule walks with Rich Aubrey. We just go on a walk once a month, and I just, you know, ask questions, or, and he's grabbed me by the shirt before and said stuff to me, and I'm like, But it's been incredibly insightful and valuable. And, you know, I'm so thankful that he's made time to do that. Yeah. All right. So we're running out of time here. I want to end today with getting a little bit of some advice from you, but it's a two-parter going in different directions. So here's the first question is, what advice would you give to someone who's older, who is working with younger people, and how to invest in the future?
Well, I looked at those. You had it the opposite way too. So I thought about it.
Yeah, the next part of this
combining
is
combining both of those.
Okay, then let's do that. So the other part of it is, what advice would you give to someone who's younger, who is working with someone who's older, and how to be a disciple, and how to you know, my point is how to be respectful and mindful and
right
and humble.
And I think respect goes both ways. Obviously, I think mm-hmm. when you're talking about an older person just kind of telling a younger person what to do without any relationship between them or any, mm-hmm. you know, any background or whatever. I think respect is really important. And I think understanding each other is really important. I think for the younger person, not just judging, well, I guess that goes both ways too. Not just judging the person based on their age, assuming that they're this way or that way based on age. That goes both ways.
I hate the anytime we like, okay, boomer, or the, oh, you stupid millennial, or like that stuff is just so not helpful.
Yeah. My son said to me, yeah, boomer one time. about mashed his mouth.
You about boomed him?
He was basically joking, sort of joking. But anyway, I think not putting up a wall of assumption, mm-hmm. because I think that is a wall when you assume something, and not, you know, being open to hearing what the other one has to say. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest thing, is just being open to that person in their life, and not just, seeing the outward appearance that, you know.
Yeah. And like, I think that kind of goes, like, I know for me, like it's like, it's not a battle you're trying to win. You know, it's a relationship you're on the same team.
Well, and the other thing is, you mentioned it sort of, is welcoming that, you know, the younger person actually going, seeking out somebody that they may be seeing out in the congregation and thought, you mentioned Rich. Well, I know Sherry sought out, his wife sought out Jane Williams, mm-hmm. who has passed on, but saw Jane as a wise older woman that she wanted to learn from, and she sought her out and asked her if she would do the same thing you asked Rich to do, and they became very close. And they, you know, she died several years ago now, but it was a valuable relationship that Sherry learned from, and she brought several others of us into that mm-hmm. relationship with Jane, and it was a beautiful thing. And I think for a young person to realize that you can get wisdom from an older person, you can get valuable wisdom, and for the older person to realize you can learn something from a younger person.
Yeah.
And it can revitalize it can re-energize you to be a part of a younger person's life. That's why I've missed teen choir so much this year. Being with those young people. I love the children, but something about being with teenagers is so special, and I have just missed it so much for the past year and a half, and mm-hmm. look forward to hopefully being able to do that again sometime. But teenagers have a lot to offer in creativity and energy and idealism, even sometimes, you know, even though, you know, you can look at idealism and think, oh gosh, wait till they get down the road, they're going to find out that doesn't work. But, you know, then again, it might.
So. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's funny, isn't it? And you heard me say this. Part of the reason I'm a student minister is because when I work with adults, I get very pessimistic about the, you know, the future and our ability to do things. But whenever I work with teenagers, I'm like, yeah, there's,
I can do anything.
Y'all, and I really do. Like, you know, this thing I said to them is, be better than us. Cause that's mm-hmm. the hope, right? Like, let's stop trashing the next generation. Mm-hmm. Let's help them. And they might not do things the way we want them to do things, but that doesn't mean it's bad. You know, and of course it's going to be super helpful if that generation is willing to listen to wisdom, because mm-hmm. that might help course correct and guide things in a better
direction.
Right.
It breaks down on both sides. If mm-hmm. either side's not willing to listen, if we're talking about the generations causing the most tension. I don't.
Yeah,
you know, we don't have time to talk about that, but I think it's generational, but I think it's also a lot of other things that cause tension too. Mm-hmm. So I think generational is kind of the easiest thing to go to,
mm-hmm.
but it's not always the only thing.
For sure. So. But I think the supreme word of the day is relationship. Like if we can push past me versus you or us versus them or, you know, and get to like, hey, let's actually care about each other and understand each other. A lot of this could probably be resolved relatively easy. It's that weird thing, you know, almost like unity and loving each other. Something yeah. that Jesus taught us. Weird concept.
Prayed for, obviously.
Well, I want to give you another shot. I know you got to leave soon, but before we wrap up, any other things you want to mention or parting wisdom?
I think I've told you everything wise that I know. Just teasing, but no, really, I don't think I have anything in addition to say. Additionally to say, but I appreciate being invited. And
well, I love it. I feel like I learned so much from this conversation. So thank you, Timpa, for this conversation today, and thank all of you for joining us. If you're on iTunes and don't mind, please give us a 5-star rating and a review. And if you want to keep up with all of Crossroads activity, you can find more content on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can find us by searching Crossroads Christian. There are all kinds of content for adults, kids, and teenagers in there. But more than all that, please make the most of the rest of your 167 hours. Have a great week.